Okay, we are live. We are going to kick the meeting off as we are informed.
All right. I'd like to call, are you ready to record? Okay. I'd like to call to order the April 21st, 2022 Stormwater Utility Commission meeting. Marina, may I please have a roll call of all the commissioners?
Vice Chair Crawford?
Here.
Commissioner Mattson?
Here.
Commissioner Parker?
Here.
Commissioner Thomas? Chair Kuffari?
Present.
Let the record show we have a quorum. Commissioner Thomas has asked to be excused.
All right. Thank you, Marina. Move on to calls to the audience. I'll run through this real quick. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during calls to the audience. In order to speak during call to the audience, please specify what you wish to discuss when completing the blue speaker card. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. Staff, are there any requests to speak received for call to the audience?
No, we have not received any blue speaker cards.
All right, thank you, Irina. Moving on to the next agenda item, council liaison comments. Reminder, this is for informational purposes. Seeing that Dr. Green is not in attendance with us today, nor on the phone, I would like to move on, which puts us to the director's report. Reminder, commission, that this is informational only. Mr. Spiker, you may please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kuffari. Commissioners, I've got a couple of things for you this afternoon. First, the South African flooding. Our thoughts and prayers go out to those affected during the flooding in the Durban area of South Africa, where more than 400 people have perished and many more left homeless. The disaster serves as a reminder to review your properties and ensure your area is as prepared as can be for the upcoming monsoon season. Please visit the Oro Valley webpage for more information on preparing for the monsoons. Next up, Pima County. Our partners at the Regional Flood Control District have started the Loop Path Extension Project along Big Wash. We've got nearly a mile of new pavement will be added to our pathway system along the east bank of Big Wash, lying just north of the Oro Valley Hospital. So thank you to our partners. Next up, ADEQ has scheduled stormwater analytical testing and monitoring protocol seminars for the month of May. These seminars are going to allow the MS4 entities, of which the Oro Valley is one, to complete their stormwater management plans and to begin to identify the chemical makeup of our fall runoff. So we're partnering up with ADEQ to complete that portion of our management plans. And lastly, the Arizona Floodplain Management Association Spring Conference is coming up May 4th through 6th. It's held here in Tucson at the La Paloma Resort. The keynote speaker, this is something to note, will be Ms. Suzanne Shields. She's the Chief Floodplain Administrator for Pima County. So I encourage you all to attend that if you are members or even if you're not. I think it's a worthwhile endeavor for those serving on our Stormwater Commission. And with that, Chair Kuffari, that is the Director's Report for April.
All right, thank you, sir.
One thing, Mr. Chair, I don't believe I need to be here any longer. I'm going to slink out.
Mr.
Nice
Andrew,
to visit
you
all.
Attendance.
Nice seeing you.
Hope to maybe see you in the future.
Under good circumstances.
Under good circumstances. All right, moving on to the regular session agenda. Item number one, review and approval of the March 17th, 2022 meeting minutes. Commissioners, you have all received copies of the minutes. Do you have any additions or corrections that need to be made to the minutes? Or is there a motion to approve or deny?
So moved to approve.
I second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Moving on to agenda item number two, discussion of meetings and events. Mr. Spiker, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair Kuffari. As attached to the meeting packet, you'll see a list of events coming up and previously have taken place. Of note, I would like to turn your attention to two items. One is the April 9th Celebrate Oro Valley celebration that has already transpired. The town had a really good turnout at Steampunk Ranch for our Celebrate Oro Valley celebration there. the stormwater utility has a desire in the future to attend this and perform some outreach in regard to stormwater activities and things the public can do to keep themselves flood aware and flood safe. In addition to that, I will point your attention to this Saturday, the Oro Valley Stormwater Utility will be performing some Earth Day outreach activities. We're going to be over at Riverfront Park off of the multi-use path on Lambert, talking to the folks about keeping the town clean and in turn keeping our MS4s clean, specifically focusing on picking up after your dog. We will be handing out some dog poop bags and encouraging folks to, again, keep the town clean and keep the MS4s clean. So if you happen to be out and about on Saturday the 23rd, please look for us over at Riverfront.
What time is that?
We are slated to go from 10:30 to 12:30.
Okay, thank you.
And again, right up off the multi-use path there on Lambert. Mr. Parker?
A reminder, this is informational. So just
I understand. Yeah. Can I ask a question about a potential meeting, watershed management group meetings? Nope.
I don't know. We can get back to you with information in regard to watershed management group. We are aware of those meetings.
I'm not familiar with them. So.
Any other clarifications or corrections that commissioners may see on here? Again, I did not list the AFMA conference here that will be happening in early May. And we will be in attendance.
All right, thank you, Mr. Spiker. Moving on to agenda item number 3, discussion of 2021-2022 Town of Oro Valley MS4 compliance schedule, third quarter report. Mr. Spiker, it's yours.
Thank you, Chair Kafari. I appreciate this opportunity to speak on this. We are, as the schedule in the packet shows, we are on track to meet all of our goals for the upcoming year here, which expires at the end of June 2022. Some activities still yet to happen here. We've got some outreach activities, some municipal employee training activities that are still slated to occur here. But in all, we're in good standing. We haven't really had a lot of rain this winter, so capturing some of our outfall discharges been somewhat tricky, but nonetheless, we are on track to abide by our stormwater management plan and our MS4 permit date. Again, this is a spreadsheet we have seen before, and really nothing new here other than try to list the schedules in quarter four for completion. Do we have any questions or comments from the commissioners? Very perfunctory.
That's a big word.
Multi-syllabic. All right, moving on to agenda item number 4, presentation and discussion of the Tranquilo and Rancho Vistoso subdivision bank protection development. Mr. Spiker, it's yours.
Thank you again, Chair Kafari. For those of you that do not know the Tranquilo subdivision, there's only one L in here. This is a development off of Big Wash and Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. Ooh. As we see in the location map here.
That's what it's called.
Yep, Tranquilo here. Just somewhat southeast of the Sun City neighborhood up in here. The developer is coming into the floodplain here, as we saw at last month's meeting, modifying some of the floodplain limits. And they're doing that with a technique of soil cement bank protection that will essentially wrap around the bank protection, elevating them up out of the 100-year or FEMA floodplain and ensuring they're as flood safe as possible. This is a technique used around the region fairly regularly, most often by our partners over at the FEMA County Regional Flood Control District. You can see the confluence of many washes coming down. We've got Honeybee coming off to the west, Bottomonte Wash kind of cutting through the middle, and then Big Wash coming in off of the east here. So here are the current floodplains for the subdivision. You can kind of see the outline of the pads in here. This is the existing floodplain, which has been modified to wrap around the subdivision. that did trigger a conditional letter of map revision, a CLOMR, sent up and approved by FEMA. Once they complete construction, they'll be required to produce as-built drawings and officially file for a letter of map revision, which will then go into the FEMA database and be reflected both at the county and the town here. Some existing floodplains, in addition to the FEMA floodplains, which are here in magenta, we've got some locally platted in pink. Those are studies completed by developers that the town does see and approve. We've got special study floodplains, which we typically partner up with a group like Pima County. We've got some FEMA Zone X hanging out over in the hospital over here. Those are areas protected beyond a levee or protected by a levee. We've got a FEMA AE zone that shows us that is a higher level detailed study. We have water surface elevations for each cross section in these zones here. But in the magenta, the zone A, we know where the floodplain limits are. You just don't have the specific water surface elevations. So we ask the developers that come in here, they have to define that water surface elevation and demonstrate again they're elevated up and not causing any impacts to anybody else.
Mr. Spiker?
Yes.
Did not. I thought the flood control district, didn't they do a watershed study for us on Big Wash multiple years ago? Eric Shipp, I thought, did it.
Correct.
They didn't give us water surface elevations.
We did not have AE zone level information.
Okay.
So the study they did was only I call it a partial study.
Partial.
And just identify the floodplain boundaries.
Okay. And can I also ask, the levees, who's responsible for the levees? Because isn't Big Wash the counties?
Correct.
So is the levee taking on the, are the counties taking it on, or is
the county is still managing the levee system and the floodplains themselves.
Okay.
They're part of the agreement, and we'll get into that in a bit, but they have partnered and were part of this particular project, seeing that they're the adjacent property owner and the floodplain management group. So their approval was as instrumental as anybody's on this particular project.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And in general, the district annually certifies the levee systems, or at least annually.
They are beholden to FEMA to certify those regularly. Which really provides a great benefit for the town.
Sure does.
So here we are looking at the bank protection plan. As we just kind of got through mentioning, you'll see a dual signatory line here. The town of Oro Valley, our town engineer and floodplain administrator, Paul Kiesler, as well as Suzanne Shields, Pima County Flood Control District, have both reviewed and signed off on this particular document. This is separate from the plat documents and improvement documents specifically for the bank protection plan. Again, this is just to ensure the public and FEMA that it was designed and will be built appropriately. So again, here we've got a nice outline of the development, and bank protection will be placed along the outer perimeter here. You can see the lines kind of wrapping around the entirety of the development. Interesting to note, they will be taking Bottomonte Wash through the development here. They do have a detention basin system sitting in the middle to make sure they're meeting existing runoff numbers, that they aren't decreasing those, but it will be released through the entirety of the development here. It really will make a nice feature for them.
I have a question. So is that all surface drainage, or is there any under pipes or anything?
There are a series of infrastructure improvements here consisting of open channels, detention basins, and culverts. There's a combination of all of them, because there are roads that cross over it.
Okay.
So we will be taking some of the water underneath those.
Okay.
But most of it will be a big open channel, which is somewhat hard to see on this.
I
kind of slide right through the middle.
Okay.
You can see all these other fingers. It is being routed right through the heart of the subdivision currently.
And I guess the follow-up question, the detention basin and all of that routing, is that the subdivision's responsibility to maintain?
Yes, this is a private gated subdivision. The gate will be, I believe, right about in here as the home start. There is a public trailhead as a part of this particular development. So the access, the new access off of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard will provide access into the trailhead where they can get into the wash or go upstream on Big Wash.
And tie that gate, the gate is going to be further down, so correct. You could still use the for the access.
Correct. And that will double up, Commissioner Mattson, as wash access here into Big Wash. So they'll be able to come in here and then gain access down ramps. It will also allow the public to get some turnaround. If they happen to get in here and don't belong, they can get back out without too much headache to the residents in here. There is a portion of public trail right up to the gate. It's just a short reach, though, so I don't really construe that as a public trail per se, but they are allowing the public to get in and then access Big Wash itself.
What is the flow of that wash? I'm not familiar with it.
Big Wash?
No, not Big Wash, the one that's going through the subdivision.
I don't have that number off the top of my head, Commissioner Parker, but I can certainly get that for you.
Well, I was just curious how large it is and how, because I'm assuming you're going to be inspecting it to make sure that they're staying on top of the maintenance.
Correct. We will be inspecting really all three of these washes, as well as the county will be doing some of that work on their own. Considering we're up here already, it will be our duty at Stormwater Utility to inspect the basin, the culverts, the open channels, to ensure its design and development is actually doing what it's intended to do.
If it's 50 CFS, no big deal. If it's 500.
And it's going to be on the magnitude of 500
not higher. Yeah.
We've got an awful lot of water trucking through this particular system here.
I have a question where the trail head is and the parking area, is that going to be expanded? And if so, is there anything to control for runoff or contaminants?
Good question, Commissioner Mattson. Currently, it is a dirt lot right now, so very little contaminants, but there is an improvement plan out there. I'm a little sketchy on the ultimate details, but things like a restroom, trash cans, were part of that. It was slated to be paved at some point in time. So controlling runoff and making sure it's not polluting into Big Wash, so we're eroding into it.
That's the town that will be
correct.
Okay, not the developer.
Now, they were required to give the land up. How it gets developed in the future will be developed or, I guess, handled at the P&Z level or the Public Works Department.
Thank you.
John, do you know, how are they getting that bottom onto the Washington River Dam protection up there?
They're dipping the vent protection down a little bit. So they're providing erosion protection in essence, not so much floodplain protection, because as you guys can see, it's got to roll right over the top and get into this channel. So as we wrap around this corner, the vent protection starts to dive down to allow it to come over the top of it in essence.
And will it have a flat gate on the downstream side, or is it at an angle to where it's not an issue?
It's at an angle that it's not so much an issue. You can see they're kind of directing it downstream here, and we are far enough away from the thou wag that it doesn't really pose a problem. But we did have to elevate that up a little bit, as we didn't want it at the low flow elevation to essentially block that culvert. And that's really what flap gates are used. They're just gates on the end of a culvert that swing open as water pushes it up, but then closes it down so as the flow is coming down, Big Wash won't go back upstream. That's typically what flap gates are used for. But as Mr. Kafari could attest to, those require a ton of maintenance. So it does not take much sediment to block that up, and now that system can't drain out at all. So they are maintenance intensive.
Yeah. So depending on the scheduling, this that might be a good area potentially for the field trip.
Yes.
Correct. This would be something we want to go see.
Yeah.
We are now hearing from this particular development, concrete and cement is an issue across the state in getting it. These guys are delayed. They've already started the bank protection, but are now delayed because of the lack of cement. So they won't be starting back up until this summer. But by October, they should be ripping again. And we'll have some progress to see, and I think it would be very worthwhile to get in here on our field trip and be a site visit.
Is this the last development in Big Wash, or are there more coming that we know of?
This is it that I know of for now. There are other developable properties down in here, but most of the entirety, if we go back to the location map, this is bank protected from about this point down, and now with Altera and Valley Vista, this is all bank protected down to about this area. So there's very few properties that can actually develop anymore into Big Wash. This should be it. But somebody can come up with a design to bring in more bank protection. But I believe the flood control district is pretty satisfied with the development as it is. So I really don't see any more development in the bottom of the wash.
Gotcha.
So a cross-section, what are we looking at for the actual bank protection itself? For those of you that may not know, it's 8 feet thick. This is a monster structure. So we go 8 feet thick on that. We do it in layers or lifts, typically about 6 inches of lift. So they lay the material down, it gets compacted, they let it dry and harden, then they come back in with another lift, compact it down, let it harden. So it's a fairly slow process, but you saw the length of it. So they do it at little stretches at lifts at a time. Just kind of move on down the road here. All of this material does need to be excavated out to get down to this toe depth. Why you're seeing this other wedge shape. This is excavated material that will be placed back once they rise up out of the wash here. Okay. We've got an 8-foot toe down depth. This is going 8 feet below existing elevation or existing grade. So it goes down really deep. That is to prevent erosion from undermining the bank protection itself.
So that would avoid the problem we sort of River Park, that old stuff.
Correct.
It's scouring under it.
Exactly, Commissioner Madsen. And traditionally what we see, the biggest forces here, it's not so much the water coming over the top of the bank protection, it's the wash itself carrying thousands of CFS worth of water that can chew on this stuff and start to erode down, particularly up against the hard surface. The water wants to be right here. Starts to eat down. So if you're not down deep enough, the water gets underneath and it could potentially undermine this stuff where it's hanging in the air, quite literally. But because it's so thick, it's such a monolithic structure, it can't support itself. I've seen it really hold itself up here and it buys you time to go in there and maintain it. But we get this depth number based off the drainage report. And I showed some of you guys that last month. Some of these drainage reports of these subdivisions are really thick. A big component of that is scour and erosion design and development. And that's how you obtain that 8-foot number. Coming up out of the wash, we're about 4.5 to 5 feet. So we're sitting about 5 feet up off the wash floor itself. So that's a total of about 13 feet of soil cement bank protection. So 8 feet wide, 13 feet tall. That is a lot of material. This really allows us to develop back in here. This elevation here is up out of the 100-year water surface elevation. And this is what FEMA really banks on. Okay, you're up and out. Your floodplain models show you're up and out. Your as-built drawings show you didn't build to this elevation. We have some assurances you won't be flooded out in that 100 or 100-year storm event.
What would be the lifespan? Just a ballpark, 25 years?
No, much higher than that, Commissioner Madsen. Industry standard says about 50 years on this, but we've got stretches in the county dating back to the early 80s, late 70s, that are still in really good shape. Because of the conditions out here, we're not very wet. It's very dry, very hot. This concrete structure, in theory, could last hundreds of years.
Yeah, I think the CDO was installed in the 80s.
So CDO is pretty old.
It's a lot different
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, the CDO.
It is, and really, it's the wet zones. Water and concrete tend to not like to live in the same habitat here. So as the moisture kind of creeps in, what you get is a lack of hardening and drying. So that concrete stays wet, it stays soft. Really want it to dry out and harden, but not dry out too hard because then it cracks. But we really want that to harden up and cure is what they call it. But that gives us our strength.
And of course, they don't get freezing and frost and...
We don't. You'll see some heaving out on the sidewalks. And that's the freeze, thaw, and heat expansion of it all. But because this is such a large structure, this thing tends not to move at all. It's pretty heavy, which helps it cure too. The stuff at the bottom is getting all this weight on top of it.
I just was thinking, if you're in an HOA, these are some of the questions you should ask.
And
so
this,
if you buy into a subdivision like mine, 20 years age.
And that's a message, Commissioner Mattson, we need to keep pushing out to our HOAs. You know, you need to get out and inspect this stuff and ensure the integrity of it's still sound.
Mr. Spiker, can I ask one more?
Yes, Commissioner Parker.
I know once upon a time there was discussions on looking at potential aquifer recharge in the Big Wash.
Mm-hmm.
And since now we're developing part of it, there's going to be more runoff. Is that anything anybody's ever considered to where now maybe it's even more beneficial to look into some way to recharge?
Commissioner Parker, considering, yes. Actually moving on, no. What I will tell you, though, from my personal opinion, this is a great example, we've got such a wide open, not so much over here, but we've got a lot of open space here. We've got a lot of opportunity for the water to soak into the mm-hmm. aquifer, really from here all the way down to I-10. The CDO is a pretty wide floodplain, so there's a lot of opportunity for it to soak in. So do entities really need to go to the extent of damming it up?
Some large check dams?
Slow it down even more?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. It is something we are still looking at and have an opportunity to do, but there's a lot of permitting that goes into that.
I posed that question about 4 months ago.
Oh, did you?
John
said
the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, really the big kicker for me personally here, the reason not to do that, we don't pump much water out of this aquifer. So if we're recharging the aquifer up here in Oral Valley, but our real water source is out on the west side of town in the Avril Valley District, that's where all the CAP water is getting dumped back into the ground. That's where Tucson Water is focused at pulling the water out of the ground and then serving it out. It's actually pumped all the way back up here and serves us.
Obie's got a well right there in Big Wash. They've got that one right there next
There's
to the bridge.
Yeah. There's a few of them. They do pull, but the Oral Valley Water Utility has been encouraging people to decommission wells.
Oh, have they?
Because we're
okay.
able to serve folks through the water system itself. So they would like to use that water resource out in the Avril Valley District rather than having everybody tap wells
here
and trying to encourage people to recharge the aquifer up here.
Gotcha.
But I will tell you, the flood control district and really the town's open space desire for development, let's keep these channels open. Let's reduce the amount of concrete on the channel bottom. Let that water soak in. It still is good for the habitat, it's good for the trees, it's good for the animals, and it keeps it a little cooler here if we can kind of recharge the aquifer here. It does help us out.
We have the Big Wash Preserve just south of there.
We do over at the Oral Valley Marketplace.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I showed you guys that in the field trip.
Yeah.
That
would slow it down.
Can I just
That's
pose a
point.
Question to you, Joe? General question.
Yeah.
What protection you have of all that aquifer land up there, you know, could be developed. Some of that could be developed.
I do want to make sure we're staying on topic, though. I don't want to get too sideways. But that is something, Commissioner Mattson.
Because it does impact on us later. It could impact on us later.
Correct. And water resources, as we see stage two cuts coming, is something that we should be cognizant of. Okay, we'll keep moving on here. Process. I've talked a little bit about this, but how does a development like Tranquilo get built? So really the first step, the developers submit plats. The town has to approve the plats. That's really the layout of the subdivision and the channels moving through the roads and streets, access points. So that comes through and gets approved. Next up, we had to approve the bank protection plan associated with the drainage report. So again, that came through the town and Pima County. Pima County will be maintaining and managing the bank protection itself. They are the experts in that field, and they own Big Wash and Honeybee. So that seemed appropriate to allow them to do that. Next up, we're sending all of that information up to FEMA to approve the conditional letter of map revision. That sets the stage to amend the FEMA floodplain limits. Next, construction begins. This is kind of where we are at currently. They are under construction. Once that ends, the developer is required to submit as-built information to the town, as well as FEMA, which triggers the approval of the actual letter of map revision and actually changes the maps, which then get distributed to the local agencies and our partners over at Pima County. This is the trigger for our flood insurance folks. They need to see the firm panel maps changed and updated so that they can properly assess the flood insurance rates to their customers. Again, right now we're currently in construction. So the fun part, some photos here. So we're looking at the soil cement toe excavation. That is right in here. They are excavating this whole thing out so they can lay the toe. We call the toe everything underneath the existing grade. This is the toe. So that's what we're currently looking at. They're excavating this out. This is the bank. This will be the wash side over here. Here's the bank and the wash side looking one direction and the other. You can see how deep they're going. And how they actually do that, these are scrapers, paddle wheel scrapers. They just go back and forth, scooping up dirt, come up and deposit it in the upper shelf here. So again, you can see these trucks are pretty large and they're already below the top of the grade there. We are inspecting this as well as our partners over at Pima County, staying on top of them, making sure they're hitting grades, the slopes look all right. The excavated materials getting disposed of properly, and that they're not breaching out into the or beyond the limits of grading or limits of disturbance, which you can kind of see. We just got roped off on the other side of the excavation there. So now we're getting into, well, how the heck do you make soil cement here? So this is the stockpile of native material that will be mixed with cement, water and aggregate to produce the soil cement. And when I talk about soil cement, it's really just a low strength concrete. Okay. So your typical sidewalk concrete is very hard, very strong. This stuff is equatable if you happen to know what one sack mix is. One sack of concrete, where a traditional like 3,000 concrete for a sidewalk is 4 or 5 bags of cement to make the concrete. We're doing about one. Because it's such a hard structure and we don't have forces beating on it, we don't put a lot of weight directly on the soil cement itself. The homes are set off of that a bit. It doesn't need to be ultra strong, but it does need to resist the erosive forces from the washes themselves. Here's kind of a comparison photo. You're seeing diesel rigs out here. You can see how big that stockpile actually is. It's a monstrous volume of material. But they source a lot of this from the native site itself. This is what makes it so cheap. They don't have to import as much dirt as a traditional concrete mix might require.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
So it's impermeable. Or very resistant.
In theory, yes.
Okay.
Nothing's truly
impermeable. I understand.
Out here.
But you wouldn't
use it. Because it's so thick and so large. It is, in essence, impermeable. But we have seen leaks happen from time to time. Orange Grove Pit off of I-10, you will see a leak through from time to time. And some of that is in how it gets built. As I mentioned, it's built in lifts, so you could have a lift not really adhering to each other
gotcha.
Very well.
Okay.
There are planes that the water can't slip. Water
so is resistant is the better term.
Yeah.
Okay.
What we see here, too, is a plug mill.
It's not a gabion.
So they actually truck this in and stand it up, and there's a conveyor belt they set up. These are site-specific facilities set up specifically to produce soil cement. There's only a few companies in town that can actually do this.
Here's a
Here's a better shot. Our partners at the Regional Flood Control District are actually doing a project on the CDO at the Omni Golf Course right now. Mm-hmm. They're expanding the river park in the very tight zones. So you'll see another pug mill going up on La Cholla just south of the bridge over the CDO or south of Overton Ashton Company's getting ready to do that project. But we might ask our partners, our district, to come in and present on that at a future date.
Yeah, I'm curious to see expanding the report.
Schedule delayed because of the cement.
Shocker. But again, you can see the size of the pavement. This is a tractor trailer rig behind it here. This thing is quite large. You've got the grizzly screens that screen out the aggregate from the dirt, and then it's conveyored in where it's all computer controlled based upon a mixed design. And then it gets all mixed in here and dumped into belly dump trucks.
Which
we see here. So all that material gets deposited into a belly dump where it shoots, called a belly because it dumps out of the belly of it. So this guy drives through, opens the chutes where the material gets dropped out underneath, and the guy drives on, followed up shortly behind with a blade to kind of smooth it out, and then a compaction machine or a rolling compactor.
Okay.
This one is a sheep's foot roller. Why we like to use that on soil cement is to put divots in there. It allows the material to adhere to itself much better. But in essence, kind of roughing up the soil cement so it sticks to itself better. But you can see how dry this stuff is. It's not like your typical liquid concrete.
Mm-hmm.
This is very dry, low slump stuff. Again, that's why you don't need it. You don't see any forms here. This is all just machine-built material here. So you can quite literally just kind of make a snowball. You can pick up and make a snowball. But you cannot do that with typical liquid concrete material. Again, you can see the size of the equipment and the size of the banks. It's large stuff. Here, what I wanted to show you, some of our best management practices, our BMPs being deployed. This is the crux of what stormwater is about on every single project, not just this one. You see some silt fencing here, really blocking the dirt from getting into the non-disturbed areas. And then we have our grading limit fencing, a combination of storm fencing, and then just some rope. Please don't go beyond that. Don't take these trees down. Don't let your dirt get in there. So we are constantly on the backs of the contractors, making sure the stuff is in place and not damaged, and people aren't driving beyond where they should be. And with that, I will take any questions beyond what we've already been asked from the commissioners.
The commissioners have a comment? Well, is there already? Yes.
I was just going to ask, on the CGP there, on the silt fence and that, with monsoon season coming, and they're obviously not going to be done before that, is that sufficient for monsoon season? I mean, we put it in beforehand.
We will be visiting this site, Commissioner Parker, and making sure they're buttoned up, particularly if they haven't begun or restarted construction.
Before then.
We're going to be making sure any openings back into Big Wash are closed up. That, again, these silt fencing, stormwater wattles are all in operational order. We do still ask that they come back and spray down for dust, making sure the track out, because they still visit the site to make sure their equipment's okay. But even though they aren't out there, we still have a compliance measure to make sure that the stuff isn't working where. So it's still an active construction site. Whether or not they're doing anything there, it's technically an active site.
And that's right. The frequency of inspection increases too.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's every 14 days or a qualifying rain event,
okay,
which happens quite a bit in the monsoon season. Well, that is all for the Tranquilo Bay Protection.
All right.
Crazy fish.
That was fascinating.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. We'll certainly make sure to make note about putting this on the future field trip.
Moving on to item number 5, presentation and discussion of the Oro Valley Stormwater Utility Fee Structure and the State of Arizona Stormwater Utility Fee Peer Review. Mr. Spiker, can I get you a glass of water?
No. Okay, but thank you.
Oh.
Start up the PowerPoint here again. As a continuation of our stormwater utility activities and requirements presentations, we are now presenting, as Chair Kafari mentioned, the stormwater fee structure itself and a peer review of other entities within the state, what they're doing or how they're setting up their fee structures and kind of show a comparison of what we're doing here in town. So again, a background here, I'm going to read this, but don't typically like to do that, but I think it's worthwhile here. And the town initially became covered under the NPDES general permit for discharges from small municipal separate storm sewer systems, the MS4, in 2003. In Arizona, it's called the ACIPDES, but it's really just an extension of the national program. An ACIPDES permit is required for any point source discharge of pollutants to the waters of the United States. The permit, often simply called stormwater permit, is overseen by ADEQ, and neither the EPA nor the state of Arizona provides any funding to the town of Oro Valley for operating this program, hence our need to develop a stormwater fee. Most cities and towns, greater than 10,000 people, and the real trigger here is the density of 1,000 people per square mile, as defined by the U.S. Census, must follow that MS4 permit, which regulates discharges of storm waters into waters of the state or waters of the United States. The permit requires each of the following six MCMs, or minimum control measures, which are defined in our stormwater management plan. And we had covered these under our first discussion in 1524, but here they are listed again. These are our marching orders here for the stormwater utility on the stormwater quality front. And a bit more background, you can turn to your blue binders, your stormwater management book, to find more information on these, but I found these sections very pertinent to our discussion today. Section 1 under 1524.13e, which is the purpose of the fund, all costs of implementation and administration of the stormwater management plan, including the establishment of reasonable operating capital reserves to meet unanticipated or emergency stormwater requirements, there shall be a reserve fund of 15% of the collected annual stormwater fees as specified under 1524.10. So you guys will see that in our annual presentations to you on the budget. We are attempting to carry that 15% as a reserve for emergencies. Now, since I've been here, which is only 2.5 years, we have not had to dip into that, but it is available to our needs should an emergency arise where we have to get out and repair something. It also covers inspection and enforcement activities, which we just saw at the Tranquilo development, billing and administrative costs to run the stormwater utility, and other activities that are reasonably required to accomplish the mission of the stormwater management plan. And those other activities, what are we talking about when we say that? Maintenance activities, minor repair activities, outreach activities. It really covers the rest of what our MCMs are tasking us. Okay, so the utility fee itself, if we look at 1524.13 Part F, getting into the legalese, where's Joe Andrews? We'd appreciate that. I'm going to again read this for the behalf of the public. A monthly service charge is imposed upon all real property in the town. The first day, beginning of the month, starting January 1, 2008, that's when this became valid, to fund the stormwater management plan and stormwater system with invoicing as defined in subsection J of 1524.13. The service charge shall be known as the stormwater utility fee. Those of you with Oro Valley Water have hopefully seen that on your bill. As any real property is developed or developed real property is annexed into the town, it will be subject to this fee. The fee is based on the cost of implementing the stormwater management program. So, a bit of history here. The initial fee was $2.90 per month for each equivalent residential unit. We call those ERUs for short. Was approved again in 2007 and went online January 1 of 2008. We've only had one increase to date. Wasn't all that long ago. We went from $2.90 up to $4.50 per month per ERU. For each residential unit, those all have one ERU associated with those. For commercial properties, they are billed $4.50, the same rate, per each equivalent residential unit of 4,000 square feet of impervious surface. Yeah, the point of increasing it was to address additional staff needs, really to meet the inspection and documenting and additional maintenance requirements that the stormwater utility had. So let's take a look. How the heck do we calculate an ERU? We're going to walk through a couple of examples here to help you guys understand a bit how we go about doing this. So this is the DeSoto Village subdivision. This is their rec facility here. Really cool little lap pool here. Where's that, John? DeSoto Village. Or anyone?
DeSoto Village, that's before innovation when you turn into Rancho DeSoto. It's off Rancho Vistoso. It's the first neighborhood on the right past the shopping center.
Just north of the Safeway.
Yeah. Thank you. Good to know. Appreciate it, Mr. Commissioner Crocker. That's helpful. I should have come up with that, but I did not. So what we end up doing, we have our GIS technician actually go out and digitize all the impervious surface. And again, if you remember from our discussion in 1524, impervious surfaces to us, parking lots, roadways, sidewalks, rooftops, pools. So we go through diligently carving out all the open space, which you can kind of see here. That's native ground or rocked up. Again, we're carving out all the islands for the parking lot area. So we get very accurate with this stuff. That calculates a square footage of impervious surface. Here we have 25,979 square feet of impervious surface on this particular lot. It's dang near the whole lot. It's pretty much impervious surface here. But again, to be fair to their particular site, we make sure and carve off all the impervious surfaces that can accept rainfall into them. So we divide that again by our 4,000 square feet right here. Square feet, and we always round down. So this one's 6.49, it's less than 5, so 6 points, it goes down to 6. We multiply that by our monthly rate, $4.50, that equals $27 per month billed to the HOA. So if you are a water customer, you will get billed monthly. If you are not an Oro Valley Water customer, you get billed quarterly. The rates are still the same. The ERU calculations are still the same.
So we get billed for the commercial.
Correct. We consider this a commercial property. This belongs to the HOA themselves. We bill the HOA. They are a commercial entity. So that gets distributed to all the properties within the HOA. They split that bill up and distribute that on their own.
So it's not to the actual commercial owner of the building. Oh, that's
the HOA.
I'm sorry, it's a rec center.
Right. And the HOA owns that, so that is the commercial.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay, Commissioner Madsen.
I was thinking here's a shopping plaza, and I'm going to be built for there.
I have a follow-on question.
I was confused. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So some of the HOAs own their streets.
Yes.
Do they pay an ERU on the streets?
Yes.
Oh.
It is impervious surface.
Okay.
It has runoff.
Private vote.
And an example of that, Commissioner.
Oh, well, look at that. What a lead in.
This is the overlook at Push View Ridge apartment complex here. And what we're looking at again, our GIS analyst went through diligently capturing the roadways, the rooftops. These are parking rooftops, but they're in the parking space. The pool gets captured. But we've carved out areas for open space dispersed throughout. So again, we get very specific. We want to be as accurate as we can in identifying this stuff. On this particular one, very large property, you know, big apartment complex, 482,000 plus square feet of impervious surface. It's very large. So we divide that again by 4,000. comes up to 120.6. It's greater than 0.5, so we rounded it up. It's 121. These guys are billed $544.50 per month going toward that.
Another question. Mm-hmm. So if your HOA doesn't have any other facilities but a road and they don't have any water, where do they get billed? Like I have two sets of irrigation, but I have no other water bills.
Correct. Typically, we can tag that to the irrigation account.
Okay.
But if there is no tie at all to Oral Valley Water, we create a separate stormwater utility account for
okay.
you and bill you really on your own.
Okay. Probably shouldn't ask these questions.
I got the bill sitting on my desk right now.
This is really part of why we're here, is to try to educate you guys, commissioners, as well as the public. It really is buried in our ordinance here in 1524, but it's good to go through some of these exercises and see the level of detail we're providing over here. And then we also give you guys a reason how we use that money.
So my management company should have a bill for these things.
Yes.
And it would be under stormwater or fee. What would it be called?
It'd be a stormwater utility fee.
Okay. Thank you.
And if you have a water bill, you can see it broken out as stormwater utility fee. Not a ton of information in there, but you should be able to see how much ERUs you've got on your property. But if you desire any information in regard to your accounts, please contact us at the office.
I will.
We're more than happy to walk through that stuff with you. And if we happen to have a map broken down to the ERUs, we're happy to share that with you guys as well. Okay. Some more information here. We've got almost 18,000 residential accounts currently active. And we've got almost 400 commercial accounts. So that's, this number here is particularly important. This is where we spend most of our time in doing that analysis in generating those ERUs. Again, these just represent one each. They're very easy to bill. Yes, Commissioner.
So, my HOA has commercial properties. Does my HOA pay for them, or do the commercial properties pay for them? Or should I just ask you and write you a note?
I would follow up with us and we can help you determine more specifics on that. It's hard to kind of tell.
I understand. Thank you.
Because it can go both ways.
Okay.
Usually the owner of the parcel.
Okay. Thank you. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
That's logical.
Yeah.
So are HOA properties, that counts as commercial?
Yes.
Okay.
Because the HOA themselves has to establish a business.
Yeah.
So they are collecting fees.
Yeah, like
they
Fry's. Fry's is in my HOA. It's not owned by the HOA, but it's in our association.
Right.
Fry's, Walgreens, all kinds of stuff.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Some revenue history here. You guys can kind of see. So again, we changed the rate right about in this period, and that's where you see the big jump coming in. We started to collect more money after the 16. That's when the change happened. And again, we stayed pretty steady here. So why it's increasing, our revenues are really tied to the amount of residences and commercial properties. As that grows, which we can all see going out now, more homes are coming in, we're able to generate more revenue to accommodate those new structures.
But eventually it would be a ceiling on the existing people because we're almost built out. We're 94%, I guess.
Correct, Commissioner Max. I mean, there will be a point if you're at complete build out, you won't necessarily see new structures coming on board. But the expansion of an existing structure may trigger more impervious surface. You put more rooftop for a new garage, that gets rolled into, well, that's a residential, but let's say that community center wanted to put a new building out on that site. That would, in theory, increase the impervious surface and might trigger an ERU recalculation.
But in essence,
we're at pretty much full build-out. We're getting very close now. So
annexations.
Annexations can chew that up pretty significantly. We annexed the Westward Look property. That will be coming online at some point in time with many ERUs associated with that particular development itself.
They're on Oral Valley Water?
No, they are not.
Okay.
Because we do have Tucson Water customers in Oro Valley, we have Metro Water customers in Oro Valley, and we have well customers in Oro Valley. Those are the three, or no water service at all. That could be a potential as well. All four of those categories would generate its own separate stormwater account and billing.
Have you thought of trying to tie in with Tucson Water or any other water agency to get to bill through them?
I know that's a very good question, Chair Kufari. We actually have reached out to our partners at Tucson Water. The cost to have them bill on our behalf. Right. We've got about 1,500 accounts that are separated out away from Oro Valley Water. So the cost to have them bill for such a small portion of people doesn't seem fiscally responsible. The charge they offered us was pretty high. So we feel we can do that on our own. But funny enough, we still partner with all those water utilities to understand their customers, move in and move out, because they don't apply to the stormwater utility. We're beholden to these water utilities to find out when people are moving in and moving out and adjust our accounts and our billing accordingly. That takes a significant amount of time on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
Who's moving in, who's moving out? Because if a house still doesn't sell, it's still impervious. Whether anybody lives in there or not, it's owned by somebody and is generating runoff into our MS4. So although they may have shut off all of their utilities, they are still generating stormwater runoff. We have to still bill them because they are still an impervious structure here.
And that's through the billing management firm, right?
That's through us, and that's through Oro Valley Water.
Yes, it's not on the door.
Thank you.
But I send it. I send my bill, my check, to Industrial Park or something in California.
That is where our bank is located. Is in California. So when you send your bills off, that goes.
So it's a lockbox to the bank.
Okay. Correct. So really, no. Very little payments come to us. They are mostly done online or sent via mail over to our banking partners in California. So that's very good of you to notice, Commissioner Mattson. That means you're reading your bill.
I sure am. Can
I ask about the non-payment non-accounts?
Yeah, you can.
Where's Joe?
What happens then?
Where's Joe?
You can do...
So accounts can go into delinquent status.
I want to see how this has changed.
They do get notified.
Yeah.
We do file summons to bring people before our judge here in the town if they do fall too far behind. So we've got a mechanism for enforcement of delinquent accounts.
Yeah.
It's in the town code.
It is in the town code under chapter 1524.
Then we send a few people to their house to make them.
Right.
Yeah.
Irina knocks on the door.
No, she does not.
And it actually costs extra.
There are court fees associated with that. If you're actually brought before the judge, that incurs additional charges. So I encourage all of you to please pay your stormwater utility fee bills.
One more question.
Yes.
So, but HOA is usually if someone leaves and they're delinquent, we put a lien on their house. At the same time, they're going to have court fees for their... okay, interesting.
Yes, we do have a lien process as well. We have the option to send them to collections. That is at the discretion of the judge.
Okay.
More
than I need to know every day. Thanks. Excuse my remark.
No, that's really the essence of what we've been doing with this whole series is trying to educate folks on why are we doing these? How are we doing these things? These are questions that we get asked occasionally, and it's nice to be able to share that with the public here. Another responsibility of the commission, this is specifically for you guys here, but we don't see a lot of it, stormwater fee reduction. So under 1524.13G, part 3 and 4, I'm going to read through this here.
There's a lot of discussion on that.
Yes, there is. But it is codified, which is great for us, because we aren't making this stuff up. This is codified. Non-single-family resident properties that incorporate first flush capabilities, basically taking the top off of the storm that comes through. Those are the dirtiest storm events you're going to see. As it starts raining, it's picking up all the oils off the streets. It's picking up all the garbage that's left in the washes, all the dead debris. It's moving down. So capturing that first flush is really important to us. It really helps that runoff be clean. So non-single family, this is commercial. That's really what we're talking about. So commercial properties that incorporate first flush or other approved stormwater pollution prevention devices are eligible for a 25% reduction in their stormwater fee. They do have to apply and get approval from the commission here and meet the annual inspection and maintenance requirements thereof. We only have one commercial property in town that has taken us up on this. That is the Walmart over at the Oral Valley Marketplace. So they have that large channel cutting through the middle of the development there, discharging into the Big Wash Preserve. The Walmart has top hat first flush filters. So all the storm drain inlets that would feed into that main channel run through these first flush top hat devices, where that filters out some of the debris, it filters out some of the oils and some of the chemicals, and then it makes its way into the channel and then into Big Wash. Those are inspected annually by Walmart and really replaced and maintained. Those reports are delivered to the stormwater utility. We do inspections on our own as well, just to verify that they are in working order. But that is the only commercial property that has applied and gained approval from the Stormwater Utility Commission. It's still in effect today.
So nothing down by Rooney Ranch has done that? Or?
Nobody has applied to the commission, Commissioner Mattson. And it's a pretty easy application process. The application is up online. Stormwater Utility is available should people want to reach out and find out more about this. But yeah, very few people go through the application process to take us up on this offer.
I was gonna say, oh, well, you should do outreach about this to the commercial entities, but then at the same time, you're also
losing money.
Yes, and no,
right.
Chair Kafari, because what
right,
these
yeah,
first flush devices do,
you don't have to maintain, yeah.
In theory, they are keeping our stormwater cleaner than what we're able to do.
Right.
So maybe we'll encourage people to go take us up on these offers. But I will tell the commission and the public, these first flush devices are not cheap.
Right.
Okay. They are quite expensive. Yeah. Especially when you look out long-term over the course of 20, 30 years, replacing these on an annual basis is pretty expensive. But there are other alternatives that we certainly could entertain. Additional street sweeping might be able to overcome some of the issues they see. Stormwater harvesting basins, micro basins on site there. But the inspection and maintenance of those is pretty intense.
And also landscaping of the commercial property.
Yes, Andrew, there are landscape ordinances and requirements. But they could enhance those or go beyond that, and that could be something the commission here could entertain. But again, we don't see a lot of applications come forth, but this is one of the main duties beyond looking at the stormwater fee and making recommendations to the council is the stormwater fee reduction. Additionally, educational facilities, religious institutions, and nonprofits have an opportunity for a stormwater fee reduction. It's a bit different than the commercial. What we ask from these types of groups, that they do some education and outreach in order to qualify for that. And they also should be doing some kind of stormwater management. Again, that could be stormwater harvesting, if you will. It could be additional street sweeping on our parking lots. It could be the first flush devices. They could incorporate some of those things. We have three entities right now that have taken us up on this particular topic. Casas Church is one of them. Oh, I forget the other two. I apologize for that.
Sun City
up in Rancho Vistoso is another one. I believe there's another church that has taken us up on that as well. But again, very few entities, and I would think particularly nonprofits, but we don't have a lot of those up here. Would find some benefit in reducing their stormwater fee. Again, as long as they're showing and demonstrating to the stormwater utility that they are educating their folks, and they're going above and beyond just a normal cleanup. That could be a dock to road, a dock to trail. We even talked about additional street sweeping. There's things they can do on their site or adjacent to their site which would construe an improvement to the MS4 and improving the stormwater quality that you guys as commissioners could accept and approve.
What about the public schools?
They are an educational facility, but I believe in here we do not charge government entities. That's the one thing I don't think I put in here. The stormwater fee is not applicable to government entities. State of Arizona, which Amphi School District is part of, they don't get charged. Oral Valley Properties, Oral Valley Water, we don't charge them. Even county facilities, we don't charge them. So government entities are excluded from the stormwater fee. That's something I should have put in here, but I'm glad you brought that up, Commissioner Madsen. They are not subject to the fee. John, I don't know if we can talk about it. Well, it is kind of pertinent with us, but maybe having like a tiered mitigation incentive type of program, like if you're saying these first flush infrastructure is expensive, but if there's something they could do, street sweeping, you get 5% off, or landscape enhancements for 10% off, something like that.
Because it is could be worth,
right, it is up to 25%.
Correct.
That's a very good point, Chair Kafari, because it's very loose right now. You don't really have a qualifying tier or strategy based upon the applications that we get. But that is certainly something we could entertain.
To open it up more.
It's very hard, though, to describe every single alternative to water quality. But it is something we could entertain, Chair Kafari.
Yeah, so like an HOA that sweeps their streets, maintains their detention basins, clears stuff, they could actually apply and say, we're really trying to do better. And we're going to send a pamphlet to our members to say, don't put your dump in. Dump your stuff.
It kind of incentivizes the...
Yeah.
Now that would, again...
I mean, I'm not asking for a yes or no. I'm just, are we a nonprofit as a HOA if Sun City is?
That is something the HOA would have to uncover first. What category do they fall into? Because
non-profit.
If they are considered more commercial or non-single family residential, the criteria gets a little tougher to meet.
Well, be a non-profit.
If they fall into the non-profit status, again, it's a lower threshold.
Sure.
But I will tell you, they need to go above and beyond the
normal maintenance.
Everyday maintenance activities, which you get clearing out your channels, maintaining your basin, don't necessarily qualify for. Even regular street sweeping, it needs to be above and beyond the normal street sweeping activities. I don't have a real threshold for you, Commissioner Crocker. That is something we could discuss and start to compile some kind of tiered approach. If you're sweeping four times a year, maybe you crank that up to eight times a year to qualify.
Okay.
Mr. Specker, I was just going to say, back when Sun City Vistoso first came in many, many moons ago, they were nonprofit and they were doing all those type of activities. Plus, they were distributing literature. They were allowing us to have events at their clubhouse. So they were stepping up and above. But that was a long time ago. I don't know what they're doing now.
They are still doing inspections and giving us those reports. They're still distributing and educating their residents on how to keep this stuff clean and really avoid impacts into the floodplains and the stormwater runoff. But again, I haven't seen an application come through since I've been here with the town. And considering we only have four active stormwater fee reductions on file here, I'm not sure who had mentioned that earlier, but getting the outreach out in regard to this particular program is something we should strive to do more of.
I'm surprised several of the churches haven't made that application.
That could be a lack of knowledge. And no offense to you guys, but it's just there's a lot of rules and regulations.
And even the billing for it is quite tricky. A lot of these companies have property managers handling all their billing.
Yeah,
they might not even be cognizant about how much they're paying in regard to stormwater fee or that they're even being charged from the stormwater fee.
I'm asking that question.
My memory is getting old, but I thought there was a requirement somewhere that they had to tell you every year what they were doing. They had to come back and on an annual basis. I don't see it there.
And particularly, Commissioner Parker does show up here. They do have to do inspection and maintenance requirements annually and provide that back to the town.
I thought there was an annual requirement.
That is an important part of this. We cannot just entertain an application, give them a reduction without enforcement of it. We have to check in back with them, make sure they still are educating their people, performing, you know, either first flush devices or additional cleanup elements, that is still happening. And that's really a big part of it. Are they continuing to do the reporting on it and getting it back in our hands? Because we can withdraw these stormwater fee reductions if they are not following through on that. We haven't had to yet, but that does start to roll into it. As boards change, people change, they look at certain fees and activities they're doing to save money, they might cut this out without understanding the ramifications thereof. Okay, now we are entering into the peer review part. So we utilize two separate reports to help us understand not just what's happening in the state, but really across the whole country here. Western Kentucky University, the School of Engineering and Applied Sciences, they do an annual report on stormwater utilities across the country. They've identified almost 1,900 stormwater utilities having been created in the United States. It's really a pretty small number when you think about the amount of towns and agencies across the country. Six states here have more than 100 stormwater utility entities. And Minnesota's got over 200 of them. Kind of makes sense. Got a lot of lakes up there. So lots of surface water, lots of habitat up there. So that certainly makes a lot of sense to me. The smallest stormwater utility, you can find that in Florida at Indian Creek Village. They only have 80 people living there. They still had enough gumption and understanding to create a stormwater utility. It makes sense in Florida. Lots of water over there. Stormwater quality is paramount for them. And floodplain management is very paramount out there. So you're even seeing towns as less than 100 people. So they still find it worthwhile to have stormwater utility. The largest, again, in Los Angeles, they've got 4 million people, so you can see the diversity here. You go from the tiniest of tiny to the largest of large. The EPA has identified 850 or so phase one MS4 communities and almost 6,700 phase two communities. When we balance that with only 1,851 stormwater utilities, that's a big disparity. How are agencies overcoming the requirements from MS4s? You know, again, at that tune, we're talking here, almost 8,000 entities, but only 1,800 stormwater utilities. How do they overcome the requirements? Here in the state, we've got 7 phase one MS4s and about 48 phase two MS4s. Not a lot, but you know, decent amount of MS4s. So how are groups funded? I'll just ask a bit ago, how do these entities overcome the challenge? So another group we lean on is Black & Veatch. They're a consulting firm. They've done some stormwater utility outreach and reporting. There's really two ways to fund stormwater improvements here or stormwater needs. You can go cash financed, or you can go debt financed here. Now really the difference here, cash is you're generating your own funds, whether that's through a fee or some other locally sourced outfit, if you will. That's the majority of folks are generating fees some way. That could be development services, get a stormwater fee. The other way is to go out and get bonds. You can see a list over here, but that's a smaller portion of it, because you would continually have to go out and get bonds to do that work. Awfully hard to do routine, regular maintenance with bonding. Big projects, sure, but day-to-day activities, not so much. And then we get into a breakdown a little bit more. So for the cash-financed groups, which the town of Laurel Valley is a cash-financed group, stormwater utility fees is the biggest one, and that's obviously where we would fall. Also supported by grants, that's another end of the avenue we reach out to here at the town. Other cash, bringing data from other groups. Permitting fees is a smaller one, but they do use that. Development impact fees can contribute a little bit. Ad valorem taxes, kind of like secondary taxes, it's what the flood control district leans on. It's a secondary property tax, sales tax, special assessment districts. You see this more often up in the Phoenix area. There's a few of them down here. We really lean in the region here on property taxes, but special taxing districts. You'll see that with your fire districts are typically special assessments. Bond funds, here's some general obligation bonds. That's typically for bond elections. That's what you'll see. We can go out, or we've seen other groups do stormwater revenue bonds. For big projects, they can go bond for that, similar to what a wastewater group might do. Some other kind of debts, some combined stormwater or other that might be where you team up with the streets department and go with the stormwater streets or maybe stormwater parks, kind of a special one. Sales tax bonds, that's bonds pulled out against the sales tax. Nobody's really using that. And then benefit district bonds.
Mr. Spector, can I just real quick?
Yes.
The utility has bonding authority, does it not?
We do indeed.
Okay.
We do indeed. And if it weren't so much for this grant, and I'll call it other cash, which we lean into the regional flood control district at Pima County, we help offset some of our major or larger construction projects. Without these two funding sources, we would need to either increase the user fees or kind of go out and solicit bonds. But
usually, if you're going to go bond, it would have to be a real big project, because you would want it over the expanse of 20 to 30 years.
A levy that the town pays for it, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Typically, Commissioner Mattson, we wouldn't, the government entities wouldn't want to extend the bond payback that far. You'd really want to try to shorten that up, but in essence, Commissioner Mattson, you're spot on. It is for higher, larger projects to get funding, but it is an avenue that we can look at. But that comes with its own set of expenses. You've got to go out to a public vote. You have to put all that online. You've got to audit it. You've got to monitor on the back end. So it does come with additional expenses that we would have to cover in addition to just the project itself. But it is a mechanism we certainly can entertain and look at should the need arise.
Yeah, I was just bringing up that the ordinance gives the utility that authority.
It certainly does. Similarly with the water utility, and they've gone out before for bonds and bond elections to fund some of their work. So here, these are some of the MS4s that the state has recognized here. Again, these are the big boys, typically over 100,000 in population. So there's really not too many of them. I think I mentioned 7 earlier. And these are the 48 phase twos within the state of Arizona. There's a lot of them. A lot of little small groups too. So we are sitting right in here as a phase two. Marana is sitting in here with us. You do not see Sowarita on the list. Their population is above 10,000, but we believe the density does not meet the 1,000 people per square mile. Kind of a big, long entity here, so I believe that's why they're not showing up on here. But even the University of Arizona qualifies as an MS4 phase two.
Surprise Mojave County.
Mm-hmm. You know, they've got enough people there, but you would think the density would need to hit that threshold. But the state has identified them as an entity here. I believe Davis-Monthan
is
also on here as well. Yep. A big entity over there. And it's funny, similar with University of Arizona, lots of impervious surface, lots of rooftops, lots of pavement. So it kind of makes sense that they're part of the MS4 program along with us. So here we're going to look at some of the phase ones and really what they're doing here. Interestingly enough, the city of Glendale up in the Phoenix Valley, they do not have a stormwater fee. We're talking a phase one entity, population 250,000 people. Well, how are they generating enough money to offset the requirements of the phase one? They're really tied into the Water Resources Group. They've got an Environmental Resources Group within the Water Service Department. So they're collecting environmental fees for that, not necessarily or specifically stormwater fees. Mesa, again, another big population center here, they do have a stormwater fee. This is the highest we've seen in the entire state. $7.32 per month per utility customer. They are fully funded to cover all of their needs. So what does that mean? They don't have to go out for bonds. They don't have to go out and reach out for grants. They are self-sufficient to meet all of the repairs, all of the reporting, all the basic maintenance. So they're running that through an environmental group up there. Phoenix, obviously our biggest population center here. They've got a strange way they're billing this year. It's roughly 62 cents up to 93 cents per month based upon how far away from the city limits you are. And that's really tied to their water system. How far out do they have to push their services to go serve you? If you're closer in the middle of town, you're not contributing as much. The further away you are, the more potential you have for your water to pollute into their MS4. So they do have a stormwater manager, they have a stormwater group, but it is housed within the Water Services Department. And what this starts to show you guys, this is, there's no black and white on this. Every entity does it a little bit differently. Now, our partners here in Pima County, this is the only county as a phase one, very, very strange setup. The reason for that, Phoenix is broken up into so many little towns. We aren't here. We have Tucson and we have Pima County, both of which are listed on this particular group. So population of about 1 million people, their stormwater utility group is housed out of their DEQ department, Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ. There is no specific stormwater fee. They are funded in part by the Flood Control District. Stormwater quality is important to them. They also do generate some permitting fees through the DEQ department to offset some of that work. Do go after grant opportunities. But again, just another different way to run their stormwater quality program.
Just real quick, because I know we're running late, but that I find that very interesting, because that 1 million people includes the city of Tucson and Oro Valley, which have their own permits, because if you take all of them out, I would think they're under that 1,000 per square mile, because Pima County is giant.
Correct.
Good point. Yeah.
So I'm surprised that they are hit with a phase one when it's including everybody else.
Right. Particularly, again,
and that they haven't
small
pushed,
entities
that
too.
They haven't pushed back on it. So.
That shows me, or tells me, they are still interested in abiding by the intent of the MS4 permit. And we understand that down here in Tucson, in the Tucson region.
Just speculating, could it be because of the tax levy situation, we would have to incorporate that?
Well, no, that's not a stormwater.
Yeah, no.
No,
I'm trying to think. Yeah,
but that goes to show you why they don't have a specific stormwater fee, because they aren't responsible for all of the land in Pima County. It's really just the unincorporated areas that they are responsible for.
And they're getting the money from the Flood Control District, which is surprising too, since everybody pays into that fund.
Correct.
But it's, yeah.
And that certainly doesn't meet all of their needs.
No.
$175,000
sure.
a year does not
I'm
cover
sure.
all the responsibilities
no way.
Out there.
No way.
We got the city of Scottsdale here. They're up at about $3.10 a month per utility customer. And they do have a dedicated stormwater utility. Tempe has got a water department managing their stormwater utility. And it's kind of built into their water and sewer rates. And you'll see that quite often, because in essence, really the runoff, although it does fall from the sky, some of the runoff is generated with landscape water pool discharges, which is coming directly from the water service itself. So you'll see a lot of entities across the country tying stormwater fees, if you will, into their water and sewer rates. The city of Tucson, they don't necessarily have a stormwater fee either, and this starts to tell part of the story of why the county is doing so much stormwater management, if you will. because the city has kind of lowered their rate. What they are charging right now is 13 cents per CCF. It really equates to about a dollar per month for each resident here, or residential unit here. That's really to fund their green stormwater infrastructure program. So not necessarily tied directly to MS4, but it certainly helps progress on the intent of keeping that stormwater runoff as clean as possible. This is a fairly new department over at the city of Tucson. Worked really closely with Pima County Flood Control District. Lots of partnering as they wash the truck through the city, typically the touching portions of the county as well. So they're kind of partnering up with Pima County on that. But we're excited to see what this group can bring. They're really focused intensely on the urban zone and trying to help infiltrate some of the stormwater runoff back into the aquifers and keep that clean. So next we're up at our phase twos. And again, the numbers here, not a lot of stormwater utilities, very few when we look in conjunction with phase ones here. We only counted a couple of them that have specific stormwater utilities. Now under the phase twos, we had 48 MS4s. Under the phase two, 1, 2, 3, 4, we only have 4 stormwater utilities. Out of 48 MS4s, we only have 4 stormwater utilities. That seems really low from my perspective. City of Flagstaff has got a dedicated stormwater utility. They're charging $3.74 a month. To me, the big question is, how do all of these small entities, how are they providing all the requirements to meet their MS4 permit when we only see 4 stormwater utilities? That seems difficult. So Flagstaff has got one, charge a pretty decent amount. It is a tiered billing system based upon your square feet of impervious surface. You see that pretty regularly. City of Peoria, it's done through their streets division. And just another different way to kind of handle that. They're $1 a month per utility customer. City of Surprise out on the west side of Phoenix, they've got a stormwater group out of the Water Resources Group. They're charging their residents $2.75%, and then their commercial rates are based upon a 3,400 square foot of EDU, equivalent dwelling unit. Ours is an ERU, very similar to what we're doing here. Surprise is a newer town. Why I mentioned that, newer towns have better standards for construction. Mm-hmm. So in essence, they should be spitting out cleaner runoff and making sure they're flood safe. So a city like Surprise, newer, they shouldn't have to play catch up like some of the older towns. And then we get to Oro Valley. Again, the smallest of the populations having an ERU, or I'm sorry, a stormwater utility. We are charging right now $4.50, and then charging our commercial people $4.50 based upon 4,000 square feet.
And Mr. Spector, let me just give you a little history. This study was done similar way back when. Most of those other phase twos, they have property taxes, and they're taking it out of their property tax to pay for it.
Okay, yeah.
OV does not have a property tax. When the fee was established, the utility was being horribly underfunded because it had to compete with everything else in the budget without a property. So that's when the council at that time and the mayor decided, yes, we need a utility fee, because we don't have the property tax base that all these other communities have.
Correct.
So that was the history when it started. I don't know about what today is, but that was when it started.
And today, Commissioner Parker, the town still does not have a property tax here, and that's really why we lean into our partners at the Pima County Flood Control District. Yeah. The county is the ones with the property tax. Oro Valley is a part of the county here. So we do lean into our county partners to help offset some of our repair projects, some of our maintenance projects, some of our outreach efforts. And we saw earlier here, and we've seen in prior presentations, the county owns property within the town still. They still have obligations of their own to meet here. But because we do have such a strong relationship with them, we certainly lean into them and try to mimic some of the activities they're performing or asking them to come into the town on our behalf and perform those activities. So until a property tax gets enacted, we're going to continue to lean into the county to assist us over here.
I know that Cottonwood has a water utility assessment, and they have also the town of Cottonwood has in its, a pretty high sales tax, and they do have a lot of commercial, and in fact, it's improved considerably since 1986. My family's lived there since 86. So I have some
and there's idea. Certainly, I think Dry Beaver Creek runs right through Cottonwood.
Right,
there.
And
they've got a lot of MS4 requirements up in that part of the state as well. But you can see, as we talked about earlier here, there's a multitude of ways
to finance. But they tack the sales tax, a proportion of their sales tax for that.
Now, the question does become, well, is that realistically fair? You're now charging everybody that shops to pay for the stormwater utility needs. Is that really a fair assessment way to charge folks? And what our studies have showed...
Well, my brother would say it's great.
Of course. And it's like, you don't shop. And we've seen that here in the town. We've got an additional sales tax here. And sometimes that can push people outside of the town boundaries to go shopping, which is a detriment to the town here because we aren't collecting any of those taxes. That's why we really like the fee structure that we have here and several others have teamed up with us. It's really that ERU billing. We are assessing your particular property on the amount of runoff coming off of your property or the amount of impervious surface you may have. That has been demonstrated by the Black and Veatch consultant firm as well as Western Kentucky University. That seems to be the most fair way to assess these stormwater fees. If you're going to go do it, assess it based on the impervious surface and the runoff generated by that. So we feel it's a really fair way to do it. Now, the fee rate itself is subject to go up and or down. But currently, as we've demonstrated and will continue to demonstrate to you guys in the future here, that is meeting the needs of the town currently, right now.
But if you're able to accomplish what we need to. It's kind of a hidden tax, because most people do not pay attention to those, all those little charges that they pay.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it a hidden tax, Commissioner Mattson, but it is somewhat buried, and people just don't pay attention to all their invoices. But it's pretty plainly stated on those invoices what it is.
Oh, yeah, but they don't pay attention.
Correct.
And
it's small.
God forbid if we turned around and said, well, we want to change it to a property tax, then you would have everybody open arms.
I wouldn't call it a tax. It is a fee because it's paying for
a direct service.
Yeah. It's directly the service.
And I think people are more willing to accept it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it
correct.
Is a fee.
Particularly, and again, this is part of the outreach that the stormwater utility needs to perform. What are the residents receiving on the backs of these stormwater fees?
Yes.
And again, we walked through it, but in essence, we're really trying to meet. Here we go. We're really trying to meet these minimum control measures and abiding by our MS4 permit. But really the intent, and I've talked about this a few times, really the intent here is twofold. One, keep the runoff as clean as you can, protecting that water resource. We live in the desert. It is paramount that water is as clean as possible so that we as humans can pull that resource back out of the ground or make sure the habitat that it is supporting isn't overly impacted. And the second part, as we talked about last month, is the flood control management, making sure we're as flood safe as practical. So those fees really help the town and the stormwater utility provide those services. So that's really what it is meant to cover. And from my perspective, right here, right now, the $4.50 a month is covering our minimum needs here.
And that's why I think the other slide in the ordinance, it says program, stormwater management program, not plan, because the program includes quantity and quality. The plan is just the quality side. The program is both.
Bingo. And I appreciate you bringing that up, Commissioner Parker. That certainly is a reminder to all. The fee is based on the cost of implementing a stormwater management
program. It's both halves.
Correct.
And it's efficient.
It is. The last thing we want to do is crank up the amount of work to go collect these fees unduly on the backs of our residents here. Again, I just talked about being fair in our fee structure. It is important that we are understanding that and being cognizant to our residents. We do not need to be overcharging folks. So we need to make sure it's a fair process and that the rates are really meeting the needs of the stormwater utility, that they're not out there paying for parks, that they're not out there paying for streets. We are hyper-focused on water quality and floodplain management.
And I want to compliment you, Mr. Spiker, and your staff, because you guys do an excellent job of taking care of the stormwater management program in the town. I mean, compared to most places outside of the town, it's just when it rains, we can get wherever we want to go from a quantity standpoint, and our washes from a quality standpoint are in great shape. So thank you.
I appreciate the sentiment, Mr. Parker. And again, I would say to the public in general, it allows staff to be very focused on what we do here at the Stormwater Utility. We have our own set of requirements. We have our own set of expertise. It really allows us to play in the stormwater quality and quantity areas and arenas and make sure we're abiding by those. So I appreciate the sentiments. But it really is on the backs of those that came before us. So kudos to the Public Works Director, the Floodplain Administrator, in setting this thing up and putting it into motion. Any other questions we can respond to in regard to the fee structure or peer review?
I would say that was very fascinating. There's a lot that I thought I understood and did not understand, and some things I learned along the way. So thank you very much for that, Mr. Spiker. All right, moving on to agenda item number 6, discussion and possible action regarding the cancellation of the May 19th, 2022 Stormwater Utility Commission regular session meeting. Mr. Spiker, Mr. Spiker.
We would like to entertain a break. We've been going at it pretty hot and heavy since last November. We do not have anything to present or make motions of in regard to the main meeting, but we will leave it up for discussion of the commissioners at this point.
I move to approve cancellation of the May 19, 2022 SWUC regular session meeting.
I second that.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion to cancel has been approved. So.
Self-interest.
Yep. Moving on to the next agenda item is future agenda items. In the interest of time, I will just say we just canceled the next session, so I believe that we just get past
this
one.
Is there anything in June that we have to anticipate that will be coming up?
Monsoon preparedness would be a presentation we would like to put in front of you guys.
All right.
And I know traditionally we are supposed to solicit input from the commissioners, so please, I do not want to step on toes here. I suggest or recommend that we get an update to the Risk 2.0 process in flood insurance. It is ongoing right now, and I believe the county has some update information that might be pertinent to the public.
It's on TV?
It is.
And I mean, they've really been pushing it on TV and the news and everything else. So.
We did talk about earlier the CDO bank protection improvements at the Omni. I think we should present that at a future date, whether it's in June or later. I believe that would be apropos for the commission to understand and, again, start to see some additional processes or elements developed with soil cement. It's going to be an interesting project.
Was there anything on that guideline list that we had for looking at the budget for the next year? Are we still a couple months out from beginning that process, or was there anything on that we needed to be discussing?
Commissioner Parker, that certainly will be coming up in the summer months. We want to make sure we give the commissioners enough lead time before we get into September, October to make the recommendation of the council. Right. I want to make sure the commissioners and the public have enough time to digest what our current needs are, what our future needs are going to be, and make sure you guys have enough time to look at that. So that certainly will be in the June or July time frame
when
we put the next series of presentations together.
Informational. What is our budget cycle? Does it start on the 1st of July or 1st of October? Or?
Commissioner Mattson, our cycle is in conjunction with the towns. We go from July 1 to June 30 is our fiscal year cycle. So what we would be looking at for this calendar year
will be for the
commission will be making recommendations for the following fiscal year starting July 1, 2023.
And they would want our request when? October 1st or January? Or
because typically
for the budget,
Commissioner Mattson, and we're getting a bit off topic here. I don't want to belabor it too much, but traditionally we have made our recommendation in the fall, October, November. So we go through a series of meetings through the fall. The commission makes a recommendation in November-ish. That lines up with the town's budget cycle. They start to solicit input in the fall into winter, go through the budget meetings through the springtime, and then they make their recommendations in May. And so that lines up with the town schedule, which is what we desire.
And I apologize. My only question was there a task that we needed to do in June in regard to getting ready for that budget cycle? And if there's not, that's fine. If there was, we could put that on the agenda.
We will take that under advisement, Commissioner
Parker.
Okay. There's nothing specific that we need to get done in June.
Okay. That was the only point I was trying to make.
I was trying to see how it dovetailed with the capital improvement budget requests.
Correct, Commissioner Mattson. And that's really this whole series of meetings has really been leading up to that. So we just got through session number 3. Session number 4 will start to begin the budget talks and the future needs.
All right, perfect.
Thank you.
All right, sounds like we've identified some future agenda items. Hearing nothing else from the commission. Moving on to adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I so move.
Mr. Mattson, is there a second?
I second. I second everything.
Motion to adjourn passes.
Time
is 5:42.